From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special Midnight Movie Cowboys edition. This is Hunter in Dallas, and joining me in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado is John Grace, looking like he's ready to go kill some criminals, vigilante style. Say hello, John.
Hello.
And down in the wild outback slash open air prison of Australia, we have Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
Hello. You like?
Yeah, heck yeah. You know, Australia Imprint Films is healing the culture right now. They're doing the Warriors. It's got the original cut and the director's cut, if you like that, which you shouldn't.
Well, it's got the original UK cut, which is slightly different from the US theatrical. So it's still not quite right. But I mean, I'll grab it when it gets to a decent price point. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the US will put out their cut and hopefully the television cut. Then all four in existence will be available.
Yeah. Well, speaking of DVDs and Blu-rays, let's whip out our junk. John, you want to go first?
Sure. Just have one item. The Phantom, Complete Sundays from 1966 to 1970. This is there in color and printed on pretty big pages and everything. I kind of went nuts for the Phantom in recent months when I tried to read a reprint of some Stan Lee, Steve Ditko Spider-Man stuff. I was so bored out of my skull that I said, you know what, I'm going to commit to characters I never was able to read when I was a kid, and the Phantom being the main one. And I just like, I've got full bore and I start collecting the Hermes Press hardcover editions.
That's cool.
Yeah, but pretty fun. They're very basic. They're kind of for all ages. So they're not really like, you know, when you read like a Marvel comic from the 60s, it's clearly written for 10-year-old boys.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
It. It's not written for adults, no matter how many nerds will try to explain to you that Stan Lee meant this to mean so much more. No, it wasn't. It's like, but the Phantom was meant for anybody, your granddad, to read in a Sunday paper that morning, you know, and enjoy. So it's a lot of fun.
Cool.
I should get those Phantom comics I got. They're all stashed away. Is like a pile about that big, just well, Phantom comics.
Jeez, well, he's so common out there in Australia, because I was reading a Billy Zane introduction in another volume, and he said when he was working on Dead Calm, he got hooked on the character because everywhere he went, that was the only thing you could buy for entertainment.
It was like, they're like 50 cents or something, 80 cents at the time. Yeah.
He said he'd go into like a liquor store, there'd be Phantom comics. So you'd go into a gas station.
They would. Just on the rotating rack. Yep. That's where I got most of mine. Not liquor stores, obviously, at age 12. I wasn't old enough.
I don't know about Australia. I was like, you know, you guys are just drinking beer at 9.
Yeah, no, I had to be 13.
There we go.
Yeah. It's a tough state of city of Melbourne.
Yeah.
It's 9 old.
School of hard knocks.
That's right.
All right.
And hangovers. So, school of hangovers. Sorry, Hunter.
So here's some of mine. This is one, bought this movie a few times and we've done a show on it. Remo Williams, Kino Lorber slipcover edition.
Mm-hmm.
Got that one. You know, been brushing up on my Sinanju.
What, just for the slipcover?
No.
Or was it a better version?
It has more special features than the Twilight Time one that I have, but
oh, okay.
It combines it with the Arrow special features in the UK with the Twilight Time special features. Like, it has two commentaries. One was on the UK edition only, one was on the Twilight. I'm gonna eventually get it when they put it on sale for like $5. I'll pick it up. Like, they interviewed Devin Murphy in a documentary, I think, but that was on the Twilight Time edition, but not on my Arrow Blu-ray. So, you know.
Yeah, this is the definitive one they've put out so far. I got The Three Musketeers with Gene Kelly.
That's a good movie. That's a really good movie. That's my favorite version of the story.
Yeah, I've actually never seen it. I just love The Three Musketeers, and I figured this one must be pretty good.
Yeah, Gene Kelly is like Jackie Chan in that with the sword fights. He's just moving around like crazy.
Here I am. I'm D'Artagnan.
He's D'Artagnan, then he goes to the communist meeting for in Hollywood.
Hey there, I'm D'Artagnan, and I'm very interested in Karl Marx. You know. Okay, so
they're all wearing black turtlenecks and sniping at each other like Hail Caesar.
Whoa, now, so we're gonna seize the means of production, fellas.
Jesus.
So this is a movie I saw back when it came out, and I was thinking about it lately, and I want to watch it again, and I found it used for a few bucks. The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise.
Oh boy. That's a slow week purchase, that one.
Yeah, but you know, it was one I was just thinking about it, and I was thinking, you know, maybe I'm projecting a little bit, but I'd like to revisit it.
The ninja scene is good.
Yeah. Yeah, Hiroyuki that Sonata's awesome.
Really good. That it's got a great ninja scene. The it's action, as good as anything in a Asian film.
Yeah, the action's in it's really good, and it's a kind of historical epic we don't really get anymore. So you know.
Yeah, that's all over unless you want Netflix streaming. You know,
does it have any fights with L. Ron Hubbard on the Freewinds ship at all?
Yes.
No. Well, it might be worth a watch then, I guess.
Yeah, they have a redhead stuntman wearing like a red-haired wig, and you know they start fighting.
So
wearing a Thetans t-shirt, you know. Tries to hit him with a big Battlefield Earth. Tries to pound his head.
Yeah.
My last two are forgotten classics, but this next one is very timely given what's happening in Russia and the Ukraine. Wag the Dog.
You mean what they're telling us is happening?
Yeah, what they're telling us is happening.
Yeah.
We don't know.
You're right.
But yeah, David Mamet, Barry Levinson, you know, haven't seen it in a while. Looking forward to watching it again. And look,
it's probably the last great De Niro film, I'd say. Wag the Dog.
I agree.
We got the snap case.
Is that a double sided as well?
Yeah, it is. Hold on. Let's take a look. It is widescreen, full screen, double sided. It's one of
double sided, right?
Yo, yeah. I go OG, go the full screen, Hunter.
Yeah, yeah, right. I want my pan and scan.
It's gonna pixelate too much in 16:9 with that old snap case.
So this is a movie that I got an itch to watch, and I looked it up, and it's not streaming anywhere. I don't think it's come to Blu-ray, at least not in North America.
They don't want it to.
Yeah. No, well, this is a different one.
Oh.
So this is my last one. And, you know, you might go, well, good, but I don't know. I just got an itch to watch it. Sling Blade.
Overrated.
Oh,
overrated.
That's on Blu-ray here.
It is. That's I don't think it's on Blu-ray in the U.S., but it's completely forgotten.
Well, it's an old, isn't it a Miramax property?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That entire filmography, like their entire output of the 90s and early 00s, a lot of it is MIA on home video.
Yeah, you know, and that one I got was just like the, you know, regular theatrical cut. It's not the director's cut. But anyway, you know, I was just wanting to watch that because my wife was saying she loves Billy Bob Thornton. And I went, have you seen Sling Blade? And she said, no, you know, never even heard of it. And I went, well, that's like,
you know what? After you watch the movie, you walk around going,
Yep, I liked him.
Well, Hunter, have you seen the movie? I think it's called Crystal, but it's spelled like with an H, CHRYSCAL, with Lisa Blount and Billy Bob Thornton. That's a superior film to Sling Blade, and so close to what it's like living in the South that I actually got creeped out watching it. But seek it out. You could probably find it on a cheap, like $2 on Amazon DVD edition. That movie's incredible. Walt Goggins is in it as well, but it's really, really good.
And a couple, I said that was my last thing, but I have some comics like John. I got Akira Toriyama's Manga Theater, a bunch of one-shots from Toriyama, the guy behind like Dragon Ball and Dragon Quest and stuff like that.
Right.
And the latest Berserk Deluxe Edition, Volume 9. Did you ever finish those movies, John?
No, I watched the second one and I liked it. I don't think I finished the third one, but I started checking the Berserk, those deluxe editions out from my library. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm up to the third edition now, which mm-hmm. I got a special request from the public library. I can't afford to buy those damn things.
They're expensive, the yeah.
And not only that, I don't have the room on my shelf for the damn things.
It's like owning a copy of the Talmud, you know?
Like a giant like road atlas for the world.
What do you think of the comics so far?
It grows. It gets better as it goes along. It's obvious he was kind of finding his voice or whatever, or his art style and perfecting everything, or how many assistants he got in the old manga production shop.
Right.
But yeah, I like it. It's really good. And like I said, I would love to see like a Robert E. Howard character given that type of treatment. Maybe it would turn out better than what I've seen in live action films and some of the Marvel comics. So
yeah, 100%. I think you know, the movie trilogy is pretty good. The new TV shows, I don't like the animation style, but there are some effective moments. There's some effective moments in there. There's one episode of the newer series that I thought was legitimately terrifying, even though I didn't love the animation. I was like, ah!
Are they ever going to issue the 90s series? Everybody says is superior.
I hope so, because I loved that when I was in high school. That was my introduction to it. I really hope they do. Anyway, Stu, on to you.
Okay, I've got quite a bit, so people just bear with me. No movies, by the way. None at all in this lot. No movies. All right, first up, we got Dave Grohl.
Probot! That album rocks!
It's good. I've never owned it until now.
Have you heard the new Foo Fighters stuff?
No.
It's death metal.
Oh, no. Nah, you were taking the piss.
No, I'm not. I promise.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought you were trying to be like me for a second.
No. I'm not pulling your leg. The new Foo Fighters album. It's like straight out death metal.
Shit. I'll pop on the Spotify tonight for work.
Yeah. Yeah, check it out.
Next up, one I did own back in the mid-90s around that time. But it was a cardboard pack release, got damaged and shit. I managed to find it again. Nine Inch Nails Broken EP.
Oh, yeah. With Robert Patrick's brother playing on that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Richard Patrick is on that record. Mm-hmm. That was before he went and started Filter.
Oh, really? That's it. Okay. Cool.
I think it's the best Reznor ever released.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I really like the one a lot.
What was it?
Thank you much for the ones.
I was listening to an interview with Richard Patrick and he goes, yeah, like, he goes, that song Piggy. He goes, somebody from the band calls me. He's like, bro, Trent's writing songs about you. And he goes, he wouldn't write songs about you. He'd write songs at you. He goes, but yeah, that he would get mad and he'd write like really scathing lyrics about you. And that song was about me leaving the band. So, you know.
All right, moving on. Next one. I forgot this album even existed until I came across it. Sex Pistols, Filthy Luke Alive, 96, I think it is. But the dumb bastard who sent it didn't send the back cover. Just the front cover and the disc. So I politely messaged him and told him and got a refund for everything. So that was a freebie in the end. But it plays fine. Next up, what we got? Pick this up the other day, $1. Living In, State of Emergency. Good album. Not their best, but it's good. It's got some good tracks on there. Another one for $1 the other day, Bob Dylan, Times Are Changing.
Hey.
Not bad. First four songs are good. The rest, it sort of descends into usual Bob Dylan fare. This one, got for $1. Bugsy soundtrack, Mint Condition. Absolutely friggin' Mint Condition. What else?
Does it come with a folded up copy of James Toback's IMDb profile?
No, that was all what was missing. That was why it was only $1. Oh, it would have been $40.
It was his date rape edition.
Also, the DR stands for on the side of the spine. Okay, cool. All right, next one. Another one I had back in the day. Came across it in Discogs, kind of cheap. Gutter Mouse, Musical Monkey. Forgot how freaking good this album was. Pretty much a blind from start to finish. All right, next one. Probably going to get some shit for it. Weezer, the White Album.
Nothing good from album. Me. Very I like that album. Boys-ish. I think that's good.
Weezer's pretty very consistent.
Yeah. This one's not so good. Weezer, the Red Album. It's okay.
I like Red Album just fine. I like White Album more, but it's okay.
White Album's better. Yeah. This one, though, is better than the both of them. And I'd never heard it before of theirs, but I was shocked at who it is. Weezer, Everything Will Be All Right in the End. Tops.
I need to listen to that one again. I only listened to it the one time, and I remember thinking it was pretty good, but I haven't listened to it since. I need to go back and listen to it.
That reminds me a lot of a mix of sort of say, the first one, the blue one. And Maladroit, the fourth one. Maladroit rocks. Yeah. All right, moving on. Keeping sort of the theme with today's film, Flash Gordon soundtrack, by Queen. There we go.
Oh!
One I've never owned before. And that, thankfully, is the 1993 or 94 remaster that Queen put out. Not the 2011 one, because the ones they did in 2011... are awful. They're brick walled and compressed to the shit. Nearly finished. This one I picked up for $3. Probably going to cut some shit, but I don't care. The Carpenters box set. Two CDs and a DVD in there.
Now Butch Portillo will Carpenter's give you a he'll give you a thumbs up. Mm-hmm. Butch is a big fan of
Karen Carpenter's voice is godlike. I've never heard nothing as good as her. All right, down to the last couple. 1 second. Right. Now, John's going to roll his eyes. Hunter will not. We give Hunter a lot of shit for his vinyl collection.
Oh, no.
The other day I bought a turntable. I wanted one for the home stereo. So I bought it, got to pick it up in a day or two.
Sweet.
So I thought, pick up a couple of albums while I'm at it. So found this for $3. It is... soundtrack, and last but not least, this one I found yesterday, $20 still sealed, never owned, from 1987. MMC favorites, yes, one and only album.
Oh, yeah, wow,
mm-hmm. Yep, stunned, never opened. So
that's good.
I will be christening the turntable. I've got work on the brain. The turntable when I set it up with Mammoth. And now I'm just looking for slip mats or some. I thought not bad, but I'm not going to invest. I want to get the greatest one ever is the fucking one you got, the spiritual healing slip mat.
I've got a spiritual healing slip mat.
Yeah, I know, the one that came in the box that you got. I'm like, oh,
I've got spirit. I've got a lot of death slip mats. I've got a Sound of Perseverance one. I've got the Scream Bloody Gore, Leprosy.
Leprosy would be a good one.
That'd I think I have Human.
I don't like care much for the cover. It's either Leprosy or Spiritual Healing would be the ones I'd be.
After sure Spiritual Healing, the artwork gets more, you know. A little bit more out there, more abstract.
Yeah.
I even have a Control Denied slip mat.
Oh, fruit now. That's yeah. That's some bullshit. So I'm looking at getting some. I think there was a Megadeth B cells one. I want that.
Oh, that's cool. Ooh,
that
old
rusting piece. Yeah.
I just want the new Megadeth record to finally come out.
Please, sometime soon, Dave, would be nice.
Yeah, it's been a while since.
Although I haven't said, I think actually the other one I saw that I really wanted is the Ghost Opus Eponymous slip mat. That looks awesome.
Yeah, that album, I bought that album based on just the cover. I just saw the cover and I went,
you
that's
have
cool.
to.
Yeah, I just went, I bought it just because that cover was like this looks like I'm doing acid and listening to Merciful Fate in someone's basement, you know.
King Diamond?
Yeah. Hey, I'm listening to King Diamond.
Hey, this is really good.
Did you ever listen to Ghost, John?
No, I haven't. I need to spin them on Spotify this week. I've been so into listening to soundtracks right now for another project that I haven't listened to any actual rock bands in a while.
I think you will like Ghost.
I think I'm going to dig them. So many different people like them that I need to, you know, fire up the Bose speakers and let's rock with them. You know?
They've got a new record coming out pretty soon. They just released.
You know, if you're two or 3 weeks away, we are.
Oh, wow. That one. Soon. Yeah.
Yeah. It's only like early March. It's out.
And I really loved that single they did. Actually, I didn't include it, but I got a vinyl single of Hunter's Moon.
Did last time.
Oh, I did. Okay. Week. Yeah. I put it in there. Okay. Yeah. That song is just, I just listened to it over and over again. It's so good.
Have you got the other one they did with the, Kiss the Goat and Mary on the Cross?
I never got that one. No.
Yeah, I wanted to get it, but now it's gone. It's gone for some stupid money.
Yeah, it had a really cool cover too. The video for Kiss the Goat is really funny.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, with the Scooby Doo van.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Baby. Anyway, yeah. Speaking of,
let's move on.
Cool music. The movie we're talking about this week is Flash Gordon. Weirdly directed by Mike Hodges, who normally does movies that like Mike Malloy would cover. Written by Lorenzo Simple Jr. And produced by the great Italian maestro Dino De Laurentiis. And starring Sam Jones, Max von Sydow, Topol, Timothy Dalton, Brian Blessed. Released in 1980. And this is a cult favorite. It's one that a lot of people like, and you suggested it, Stu. What made you want to do Flash Gordon all of a sudden?
All right. So there's a big 4K box set that's out. There's a 5-disc one in the UK and a four disc one in Australia. And the only difference is the missing disc is the. If you show it, have you got it?
I've got the Arrow one. I've got the Arrow Blu-ray that came out over here.
How many's in there? How many discs is that?
I think it's one. It's just two.
Okay, no. This
but
one's
Arrow a, put out a 4K bigger. One that I don't have.
Okay, no. So there's the big 5-disc one in the UK, the 4-disc one in Australia. The only one difference is the Australian one doesn't have the Flash Gordon soundtrack, which doesn't matter. I've got it. But on there, on one of the bonus discs is a documentary called I Am Flash about Sam Jones, which you can only get in that set. And I thought, wow, sounds interesting. I'd like to watch it.
This one's anyway, got I'm, that. The one I have has that.
Oh, wow. Okay. Anyway, I'm flipping through streaming and it pops up as a recommend. I go, oh shit, I'd like to see that. So, saved it in my list and watched it a couple of days later. And thought, you know what? I really want to see Flash Gordon again. It'd be an interesting topic to talk about on the show because I've not seen it for many years. I actually saw Flash Gordon in 1980 when it came out.
So did I.
In theaters. Yeah. It was a big deal. I remember it being a big deal. I think it flopped, but I remember.
It was the loudest movie I had ever seen in a theater at that age.
Yeah, it was pranked. Yeah, they cranked that Queen soundtrack for sure.
Unreal. I remember the feeling of it too. Like the bass was shaking the theater and everything. It was crazy.
Yeah. So I just saw Flash Gordon. I had it right on the shelf. I figured if you didn't own it, you two, it'd be pretty easy to get a hold of somewhere along the way. So that was it. But yeah, watching the I Am Flash documentary was sort of real impetus for me to want to do this week.
I need to watch I Am Flash, and I was reminded of it because I pulled out my Arrow Blu-ray, which I hadn't watched, and I went, oh, this has I Am Flash on it, and then I remembered all that. And, you know, this movie sort of re-entered the pop culture with the movie Ted, the Seth MacFarlane film.
Yeah.
I don't know if y'all saw that.
But, never, you know, saw it.
There's a scene. Yeah, there's a scene where, you know, there's a thing in the film where they love Flash Gordon, and there's a scene where Ted's at a wild party and Sam Jones is there. He's like, you got to come to this party. His head's parted down the middle. His hair is parted down the middle. Yeah. So, and they go and party with Sam Jones, you know. But, you know, I haven't seen that documentary, but I plan to watch it now that I've
revisited. Watch it. It's a very good watch. Very good watch.
You know, the first time I saw this movie, I was an ex-girlfriend showed it to me, and I was watching it on the tiny television in her room. And so this experience was different, watching it on Blu-ray on a big screen, you know?
Yeah. Night and day difference.
Yeah. It just, you know, it was kind of like going from watching, you know, Batman, the TV show, to Star Wars or something.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I say that cause it's written by Lorenzo Semple Jr.
Yeah.
But something I didn't know, I had no clue that Nick Rogue was attached to this movie.
And yep.
He was supposed to do it. And there's a thing on the Arrow Blu-ray about what that movie was going to look like. And the screenwriter, who was Michael Allen, talks about what their vision for it was. You know, and it's funny because the movie's directed by Mike Hodges, and Mike Hodges is kind of this tough guy, British movie director. And if you had told me, guess who directed the Flash Gordon movie, Nick Rogue or Mike Hodges, I would guess Nick Rogue, you know, and plus Nick Rogue did do some populist kind of movies. Like he did The Witches with Angela Lansbury, which has a cult following as an 80s film. But performance, you know, performance, you know, and, you know, people like Man Who Fell to Earth and, you know, the, Don't Look Now, but those are kind of art house movies.
But, they were mainstream in the '70s though. Don't Look Now and Man Who Fell to Earth. They got like a normal movie release, like in the mid-'70s in America.
And so the idea of him doing a Flash Gordon movie, it's not too weird, even though he's an art house director. It's not too strange. It doesn't seem too out there. And a lot of the ideas they have are interesting that they talk about, but it seemed like the ideas Dino De Laurentiis had, he wanted more humor in it. Nick Rogue's film was going to be more serious. It was going to have more biblical themes. Eventually they just didn't see eye to eye on it and everybody walked away. And the movie that came out was the movie that came out. But what'd you think about this movie when you saw it, when y'all saw it, when it came out?
Wow. When you're 8 years old or not, I think it got here very, very early 81, or it might've even been 1980. It was a long time ago. I remember liking it, but thinking exactly what I thought, say, when's this film going to end? It just went on and on and on.
But it's not as that John long. Said, it's under 2 hours.
It bloody well feels a lot longer than that, though, when you're not enjoying it. So, but as John said, yeah, our screening was loud. They really cranked it up in there. I remember the other film that was so loud as well at the time was Empire Strikes Back. They cranked the shit out of that one, too. Same theater, mind you. So it might have just been that theater.
That was the same year too, wasn't it? 1980.
Yep. Yeah, it was. And you know, as a young boy, you're sort of enthralled by what you're seeing. Flash Gordon can fly, and there's all these Hawkmen. But when you're now age 50, you sit there and think,
Well, so when you saw it when it came out, John, what did you think?
When I saw it, I was 8 years old. So but I had seen Empire Strikes Back, I believe, before this, like maybe by a month or two. And, or I don't remember which one came out first, but I remember it was loud. It was very colorful. The women were beautiful. Mm. Like Ornella Muti. Wow. Oh. Oh my god. Jeez, boy, yeah. Was I crushing hard on her at 8. I remember, like, I love the color and I like the effects. I knew they were very different from what I had seen in the Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
And so other different films at the time. It was a different style. It looked great on the big screen. I remember being very disappointed that there was no, like, sword duel at the end, like a big sword fight, like the Buster Crab cereal, which I had seen a bit of at the time before I saw this movie, a couple of years before I saw a couple of chapters of the serial on television. And I think I may have read a Flash Gordon comic book or something. It's very possible, but something felt incomplete about it, even though I enjoyed it and was really entertained by the color and the loudness and Brian Blessed, just like a terrific performance. And all
every
that.
Time Brian Blessed talks, it looks like he's about to bite someone's head off.
Yeah, exactly. He's chewing the scenery. Like you wouldn't.
But did anybody notice that Sam Jones, Flash Gordon, that's not his voice?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Never knew that until I watched the documentary and they talk about it, about what happened. And now when I watch it again, I go, yeah, that's not his voice.
Yeah.
So, very well known.
When I watched it the other night, I kind of know, like, it's kind of like Stu, the effect it had on Stu. Boy, the flaws of the film jump out at you all these years later, and you realize Sam Jones didn't have the screen presence to be there, to be supported by Timothy Dalton, Brian Blessed, Max von Sydow. He sticks out like a sore thumb. Like, they just pulled him off the street to play Flash Gordon.
He was cast 100% for his look. That is
exactly. And Melody Anderson, I think is her name, who played Dale. She was a last minute replacement for Dale Hadden, had actually filmed on the movie for a week or two. But Dale Hadden, if you look her up on Google Images, she has these striking eyes. She looked too much like Ornella Muti with the eyes, and they didn't want somebody exotic looking. And so they cast Melanie Anderson. Melanie Anderson's pretty bad in the film too. And doesn't, because she's playing an American woman, New York woman, whatever. And it doesn't really jive in the film. And also the lack of a sword fight at the end, which bummed me out as a kid, still comes to me. It comes off very annoying. Like, oh, Flash Gordon rams a ship into the wedding. Oh, it just happens to spear Ming. There we go. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
this keeps you from having to film a fight scene or anything really fun. You know,
I liked the movie a lot more than y'all did, but I did when I was watching it last night. You know, there's a lot of Flash on the scooter.
Yeah.
In front of the green screen. And then it's just boom, Ming's dead. He's got the sword, but it's like, yeah, we won. You know.
Well, the problems start a lot earlier. I watched it just this morning. Popped it on the television down the back and said, hang on a second. Here they are. They're zeroing on a scope on Earth. And Ming's being told by Clytus about, oh, this place called Earth. Yet they got an earthquake button on there. So if you've never heard of this place called Earth, why is there an earthquake button? How does that make any sense?
That seems like a Lorenzo Semple touch to me.
So it's like a De Laurentiis, hey, earthquake button.
That whole opening sequence does reek of like a low budget. It feels like a low budget.
Hey, Ming's pressing the stock footage button of a building.
Yeah, exactly.
What about the button that says hot hail?
Yeah, hang on. Oh, I love the hot hail button, you know.
Makes no sense. Why wouldn't you just say lava rocks instead? That would make more sense.
Because it's hot hail, you know.
It's just stupid.
Yeah.
If
you, that football game in the court annoyed me, like in the, like when they had that football game.
Oh, it's totally goofy.
It's lame. And when I was a kid, that really put me off because I knew that wasn't the character Flash Gordon. And it wasn't true to the whole.
I gotta tell you, you know what's funny is, you know, my wife and I ate dinner and we watched House, and then I went, okay, I gotta watch this movie for the podcast.
Which House? The Japanese one, the movie, or the TV series?
The TV series with Hugh.
Oh, Lee. Okay, with the British actor, right?
Yeah, and so I gotta watch this movie for the podcast, and I throw on Flash Gordon, and the Queen music kicks in, and she's like, what is this? And then, but after they get off the ship and they get into Ming's court and Timothy Dalton and Brian Blair, when you kind of get the too much lore all at once moment in the movie, Amy goes, she just goes, I'm out. This is little boy crap. And she was like, and I went, fair enough.
Fair enough. She just goes, close the door behind you, please. I'm going to enjoy this film for an hour and 50 minutes. Yeah. So yeah, straight off the bat, it just goes down the crapper for me. And then Flash is flying the plane.
Yeah.
The pilot into the Zarkov thing. And then all of a sudden they're sitting there having a sort of semi-fight in a rocket ship. What? Why? Why? So we can fly into wherever the hell we're going. Where are we going? Are we going to outer space? Are we going to another planet? I mean, where are we going?
We're just
how did we get there?
We're just going. I love Topol in this movie.
Topol was good. The problem is in the script and the way the action plays out. Like, Flash isn't very heroic. Every escapade, he either gets out of being kind of a liar or deceptive, or because like Princess Ara has the hots for him and saves him and fakes his death. And you know, it's just like he's this, he gets out of things because he's a boy toy and Princess Ara likes him.
And he's got the same front teeth as Freddie Mercury as well. If you look, not as bad, but they're on the way there. But the whole Topol scene, the Zarkov one of the reprogramming with the, parallax view, 5-minute montage we get of, I just sat there thinking.
I love that he got out of it by thinking of Shakespeare in the Talmud.
You know damn well that was Topol's idea. You
must 100%.
That was him. Otherwise, I'm not doing this film. I'll go back to Israel. If a lot of years.
Well, the interesting thing is, supposedly because of this film, Cubby Broccoli was thinking of in For Your Eyes Only, he was going to have Timothy Dalton as Bond, even back then. I guess this is based on if Roger didn't want to do the film. Ornella Muti would have been playing the female lead looking
for
revenge.
That's a good choice.
Yeah, and Topol would play the character he played, and only Topol ended up in the film, but that was the original, the plan, supposedly, just because they went to see Flash Gordon and went, okay, there's our Bond, there's, you know, the leading actress, there's all that. I was just like, too bad they didn't go with that direction.
They've got my still favorite Bond in this film, Timothy Dalton, and my still favorite Bond film, Living Daylights.
Yeah, Living Daylights is really good.
And Timothy Dalton, for the record, fucking hates this film. He won't acknowledge it, talk about it, nothing.
I don't blame him, really.
There's one funny part in that Iron Flash documentary where they're speaking to a guy who was an extra or something, or in the background. And he went up to Timothy Dalton years later in the street and said, oh, I had a fight with you, or you killed me or something in Flash Gordon. And Dalton just walked off, didn't even speak to him. He's got no involvement in that documentary. He's like, he's done much better things than that. But I do have a question later on I want to ask you guys. So maybe later on after we're done. Melody Anderson is not good. Sam Jones is. I don't want to speak bad about Sam Jones because he comes across as so nice in the documentary. He's a really, religious, faithful man, very family oriented man who's always kind to the fans. So I don't want to speak bad about
his. He's not a good actor, you know. Like, he's in the movie because he looks good, you know. But it doesn't mean he's a bad guy, you know.
Well, the interesting thing is, Hunter, he's in a better comic book adaptation as the lead, the Spirit TV movie pilot, directed by Michael Schultz. It's really good. It's way better than that Frank Miller movie. Because I've often said they get the Spirit wrong when they tried to adapt him into the Frank Miller movie because they think he's noir. And he's not noir. He's like a Terrence Hill slapstick action thing. And that's what the Sam Jones TV movie pilot is. And it's worth getting. It's on Warner Archives, I believe. You can get it for like $10. It's worth a look.
I'll check it out. But what does Jim Steranko think of the Spirit? What does he think of Will Eisner? What it
Oh, you mean when he went on that rant talking about what an asshole Will Eisner
talked to me? He called him another Bob Kane.
He is, because Will Eisner, when Steranko interviewed him for the History of Comics back in like 1970 or whenever, he said, "Okay, who collaborated with you on the Spirit? Because you weren't the only one working." He's like, and Steranko knew a lot of other artists and writers worked on that strip. Basically, Will Eisner ran a sweatshop, and has been worshipped by all these comic book fanatics. And he was another Bob Kane. Somebody else was doing the art and everything. And Will Eisner was like, "Oh, I don't remember who worked on the Spirit with me."
Remember.
And Steranko's like, "You asshole!" And he just tore Eisner up. He said Manly Wade Wellman wrote scripts for the Spirit, and you know, he named all these different artists that worked on it. And it was just like, you know, Eisner was always worshipped like this god of comic strips and comic books. And it's like, no, he was another Bob Kane. That's like somebody else was doing the art. And
I always wanted to see the Spirit or watch the Spirit. I've never have seen it, but from what I can sort of determine, is it similar in look to, say, the Sin City films?
It's really bad, to be honest with you.
Frank Miller directed the Spirit movie, and he co-directed Sin City, and he kind of took the same approach for it.
Right.
But, you know, nobody liked it.
It's awful. Scarlett Johansson looks great. Best she ever looked in a movie. Especially right. in the PR photos, like she looked amazing. And but the movie itself is atrocious. And the Sam Jones TV movie pilot was superior in every aspect. It was way better, way more fun to watch.
I want to see that now.
And he's pretty good. Sam Jones is good in it. In fact, he had a career playing villain of the week at different Stephen J. Kennel shows. He was a villain on an episode of Renegade, Lorenzo Lamas, and they have like a karate fight in the woods. He's like a Rambo type, like a war vet that went crazy. And
I've got a question. What killed Sam Jones' career? His lack of acting or Dolph Lundgren?
I think he had issues because when he left the production of Flash Gordon, he did not stick around to dub his voice. And I'm sure De Laurentiis and Universal Studios blackballed him from a lot.
Oh, they did. Yeah.
Yeah, for a few years. So he kind of made a comeback. Like, he was in some low budget Chopsaki movies with Simon Ree, I think one of his early productions before Best of the Best. They did a movie called like Ninja Assassins, Night Assassins, something like that. I can't remember the title, but it was Sam Jones and Linda Blair, I believe. And and then he would play villains in different for different TV pilots, and he was a villain of the week because he's a good looking guy, but he did a good evil laugh. And he had a black belt in Taekwondo, so he'd do, you know, screen fighting. You could have a fight scene with him. And I think he was a former Marine, so he, you know, knew how to use weapons. You didn't have to train him in shooting lessons for the role. So he had a good career as basically a TV villain and everything. I remember my first time in Hollywood, we went to some diner where the menu was all suggested by local celebrities that would eat at this diner. So you had the Andrew Dice Clay burger, and it was just like a big burger with a big piece of onion on it, and it said in the menu, "If you got the guts, you know, you could eat the Dice burger." And I remember I ordered the Sam Jones protein shake because I guess he would come out there after his, you know, working out at the gym or whatever, or the karate school, who knows, and then he would have his custom shake made for him. So it was pretty cool. I wish I could remember the name of the diner, but that was an interesting experience.
All right. But, a bunch of other actors in this film. Didn't really care much for Brian Blessed. He's very good. He's too much of a comic relief.
Oh, come on, Stu!
I know we're jumping all over the place and we're spoiling shit, but all the Hawkmen at the end lining up to say thanks, Flash. I just wanted to put my head through the TV.
Speaking of the Hawkmen all lining up, this movie is very Italian in how it looks.
Oh. Yeah.
It looks like a big budget Mario Bava film. Like the sets, they're very red. Apparently, Dino De Laurentiis insisted on stuff being red.
Hey, I like a rouge.
You know, I read the Flash Gordon in the 30s under Mussolini. you know,
well, it was offered to Sergio Leone, you know, and Sergio Leone hated the script. He said,
good on him,
because he loved the comic strip, and he says, this isn't anything like the classic Alex Raymond script. I don't want to direct this. Sorry, Dino.
Sorry, Dino. Dino, in the thing with the Nick Rogue one, they said he wanted more humor. He goes, the audience, they suicide themselves.
What?
But it did have these scenes like where I was going, wow, that's like artsy stuff, where Ming takes a needle to what's her name? The female Melody Anderson's character.
Dale Arden.
He takes a needle and takes a tear and he turns it into this like ball of flame thing, and he puts it on a necklace and puts it on her, and Topol's character, the doctor, is going like, oh, you've done fusion, oh my gosh. He's like, and imagine what you could do to the oceans, and he's like, imagine, like, you know, he goes, I could do this with a single tear, what could I do to Earth's oceans, you know? And it's like artsy stuff like that, you know, in the Nick Rogue one.
Yeah. But, it had that sort of Master of the Universe film feel to me.
How dare you, sir? Masters of the Universe is like, we're gonna build one set and then we're shooting the rest. He gets thrown back into New York City.
Yeah.
Because Menachem Golan doesn't want to build any sets.
I'm not gonna pay the license for half the characters from Masters of the Universe.
If this was Masters of the Universe, Ming would have come to Earth and been in New York City.
Yeah.
He would have had some black guy going, yo man, great cape, yo brother, yeah, that looks so,
hey yo, Anton LaVey.
Yeah. It would have looked like the 1950s Flash Gordon TV show with Steve Holland. They filmed in Berlin after World War II, so it had this bombed out city look, and that was your futuristic Mongo Planet Mongo for Flash Gordon's TV series, which you can find on different public domain sets.
So when Ming came out, my wife goes, is that Anton? Is he supposed to look like Anton LaVey? And then I was thinking, I said, well, this character predates Anton LaVey. Was Anton LaVey trying to look like Ming?
Yeah, for sure.
You think so? Do we have a citation on that, or is just...
Yeah, look at him. Look at him.
Yes.
What you need.
He looks just like Charles Middleton in the old 30s serials.
So. Well, and, you know, I was like, you know, so many people took their cues from comic books back then. Like, it's not like comic books just now became popular. Like, you know, I told her, I'll bet Anton LaVey took his inspiration from Ming.
Yes, he did.
Sure.
I mean, remember we did our show on Count Dante, John Keehan, the crazy karate master.
Yeah.
If you look at him, he took his look from probably Doctor Strange. And I would even say Kraven the Hunter in the Spider-Man comics.
Oh, yeah, Kraven, 100%, yeah.
Yeah, but he's definitely got the Doctor Strange goatee and everything, and the you know, the styled hair, and it's a total comic book look. But
even Steven Seagal looked like the John, that guy, the John guy. If you look at his early pics, it looks like him. Just strictly coincidence, I dare say, but it looks a lot like him.
You know,
did that ever come out? Did it ever come out, the John, that documentary, or not?
He has not finished it yet. I think he's still working on it. I ran into him on a Blood and Guts Karate Facebook group that they talked about John Keehan, and I just linked our episode, and he popped up, said, hey, how's it going? You know, it's just like, he's still working on it, as far as I know. I'm in his group, actually, to follow. He got sued by different former John Keehan students that, you know, and it was just designed to delay production and delay finishing of it. You know, you don't have the rights to make a Count Dante movie, all that stupid shit. But it'll be finished eventually. But like Bruce Lee was inspired by comic books. A lot of different actors and directors, they were heavily influenced. Sergio Leone's big dream was to direct a Phantom movie in the 70s. He wanted to Phantom.
Holy shit, that'd have been good.
Yeah, imagine if he'd made that, you know.
Clint Eastwood is the Phantom.
At an Ennio Morricone score. Yeah. The ghost who walks. Shove this gun up your ass and have devil bite your face off.
Oh man. Would have been as good as the Billy Zane.
it would have been interesting. I know that it would, you would have had a Morricone score, and who knows? Who knows how crazy it would have been?
It's like that Spider-Man they keep talking about that would have been done in what, 81 or late 80s? That's all.
Toby Hooper and then Joe Zito, and then I think Albert Pune almost filmed it. And I actually talked to Albert Pune about it on Facebook, and he said he was going to shoot the finale with Spider-Man fighting, I think it was the Lizard. He was going to shoot it like Ridley Scott filmed Alien. It was going to be like a horror film, and it was going to be, he would film stuff during the rain so he could hide the stunt wires on the stuntman actor when he's swinging through. He was just going to do it very like a horror film, very suggestive, because they weren't going to film it for like $3 million or something. It was a crazy low budget.
Yeah. There were going to be a lot of like ribbons and robes in the air, drapes.
Yeah.
Albert Pune like loves, he taught me, if you don't have a set, put up a bunch of drapes and have them flow in the air, and it just.
Oh, I think he was going to have he was going to have Spider-Man fight the Lizard in the sewer, so he would have shot it like the ending of Alien, and it would have been a lot of, it would have been interesting. It would have been better than, most of the Spider-Man movies that have been made.
Probably. It would have been better than Cyborg.
Probably wouldn't have been very good.
Yeah.
Better than Cyborg, which is what they use the sets for, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Mm-hmm. They were going to film it on the old Year of the Dragon sets at Dino De Laurentiis had built it in North Carolina. It's also where they shot The Crow. Shot The Crow on those sets.
Well, The Crow is an awesome film.
Yeah.
So that's okay.
Dino, I always think it's weird that Dino does like these like big, he did these big budget 80s movies, but he also does like Fellini films.
All right. Yeah. Stop right there, because I think it's time to get to the question. What's more of a worst film, not best, but what's more of a worst film? Flash Gordon or Dune?
You're asking the wrong guy, because I like both.
All right, John, I'll ask someone who counts then.
I watch Dune like twice a year, you know?
It's funny, I didn't even see the Dune remake. I did see Dune opening night in 1984. In Natchez, Mississippi, but I have not watched it since. I have a Blu-ray sitting on my shelf. I never disliked Dune. I thought it was interesting, and I thought at the time it was cool to see a science fiction movie that was a bit, that had some scope and ambition, but I don't remember it being 100% good, but there was enough there for me to get, I had a chance to get the old Blu-ray, not the one Hunter's showing off his Arrow shelf. This is the Universal Blu-ray I picked up for like $3 all at a place, but I haven't watched it. I reread the book last year, which was perfect 12-year-old boy's power fantasy.
It's a young adult novel.
Yeah, it is. It is a young adult novel. It's not really
when you're a speed reader like you are, you can get through shit quick.
It took a month, actually. I had to read a chapter a night because it was just kind of...
The chapters are really short. You can whittle away at that book pretty quick if you just read a chapter a day.
Chapters
are short. It's not a big time investment if you do it like that.
Right. It's,
Just real quick, get on to that sort of style. Far, far inferior. Battlefield Earth, the whole book. I think the unabridged audiobook is 49 hours long. That's insane.
And not worth it.
No. God, no.
It could have been 200 pages and been the same.
Should have been just a novella, really.
Because I read the damn thing. And it was just like, wow, my God, why?
Was this when you were dabbling in Scientology?
Although I was working a temp job not far from the Church of Scientology in Boston. There was nothing to do all day because it was a mailroom job. So you delivered the mail in the morning and in the afternoon, and you had like 7 hours to kill in the office. And so I just sat there and read Battlefield Earth for the week and got through it. And I said, okay, finally I read this damn thing. Let me go trade it in. And the Travolta film was not out at the time, so it wasn't the shame.
It's only half the movie anyway. Sit through again.
Was it the shameful act of reading that it would become like in recent years?
It's really funny in the Goodwill stores here in the book section, you see rows and rows of Dianetics books. You think these people actually wised up and got away.
I used to see stacks of them in used bookstores around when I was a kid and stuff, and wonder what the hell it was because nobody really knew back then. You know, they'd read it and go, "Oh, this is bunkum." And you know,
in Australia, Stu picks it up and he opens it up, and inscribed inside it says "Mike Rinder."
Mike Rinder. No. It says, "Stay away. Do not dabble."
But Mike, but did any of you see the Dune remake, the new one?
Haven't seen it.
No. I have no interest in Dune at all. I never have.
The thing about the new one is a much smoother storytelling experience.
Mm-hmm.
But the David Lynch one has more, it's got a better cast.
Yeah.
And it has that David Lynch weirdness. Now, there's stuff that works better in this one.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I liked was that it was a modern, big budget, sci-fi property that wasn't full of jokes.
Right.
Like Jason Momoa tells like two jokes in the movie. That's it. And the Lynch one just has, it's got something, even though especially in the third act, it gets pretty rough in terms of telling the story, but there's just something it's got a quality that this new one doesn't have, that I just think is superior.
I don't think it's meant to be a movie. It's just not meant to be a movie.
And also it's a full story. The new Dune is half of a movie.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
They released on Blu-ray here, maybe about a year or so back, a box set that had Dune, the television saga or something.
Yeah.
Came out. And also Children of Dune, all in this box set thingy. It came out. So it's like there's Dune here, there's a new remake, there's this TV.
Children of Dune one is basically, it's Dune Messiah and Children of Dune. Like it's.
Yeah, it would have to be. Well, the problem is every adaptation is unfulfilling to the Dune readers and the viewers. So it's basically the perfect franchise to constantly remake, respin, redo, because no one's ever happy with any version that's been made. Like no one's ever 100% satisfied. So it's kind of the perfect thing to fill in.
I can tell you the perfect solution.
Mm-hmm.
Just do a big budget. Like we're talking Francis Coppola, Megalopolis, 120 million, just throw whatever at it.
Yeah.
Do God Emperor of Dune. That's it. Just do a straight, no frills, big budget adaptation of God Emperor of Dune. Cast James McAvoy as a giant worm.
I have never read that one. I need to read it because
it's basically just like a fascistic philosophical tract of a man who's a giant worm thinking about like authority and rule.
Oh wow. Yeah, I heard that's the last good one. Like,
and that's apparently the one, that one and the first one are the two books in that series that people love. And they love God Emperor of Dune because it fulfills their power fantasy of being a giant worm ruling a planet.
It must be very popular with the blogger Ain't It Cool News crowd.
Oh, it's very popular with, it's popular with bugmen and right-wing fascists. It's popular with like Wignat Hitlerian types and like,
so like Richard Spencer is like stroking a copy.
Oh yeah. Richard Spencer is like, he has it next to his picture of Joe Biden. He's got his copy voter next to his glass of wine and Joe Biden and his pomade.
Right.
It's Joe Biden. Not Joe Biden. Joe Biden.
Joe Biden. And meanwhile, the Ain't It Cool News types also, this is okay. God Emperor of Dune. I've got it. You guys, this is how we bring America together. Okay. You can bring together the far left nerd Ain't It Cool News types, and you can bring the far right, Gab types. They'll come together and they'll love God Emperor of Dune, and America will be the divide will be healed.
Only problem is all the Ain't It Cool leaders, like all your alt-right types, those are all on Fed list, basically, and most of them are probably feds anyway. But
well,
then
they're
all
FBI
your
agents, so it's
all the Ain't It Cool guys have been Me Too'd out of working. So it's like, because Ain't It Cool, if you go to that website, it's a graveyard. and it hasn't been updated in like a year, and it's just dead, you know, because Fat Boy got busted on a little too much butt and chest grabbing.
I thought he was Head Geek 666, you know.
Yeah, he claims he gave the site to his sister, and his sister runs it, and he was going to go through therapy or introspection for a year and a whole lot of Twinkies and pound cakes and big bottles of Pepsi.
Well, I'm speaking more broadly, though. You know, those types.
Right. Those types.
They'll come together over God Emperor of Dune. You know, it'll unite the country once again.
No, uniting the country will be the home video high def 26K version of Phantom of the Park. That'll unite the country. Yeah.
That too. You know.
32K, I mean. Yeah.
Well, you can napalm the theaters where they gather.
Did I tell you guys I found a VHS copy of Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park?
I have it
displayed in my office at work.
Good man.
As you should.
And that's, remember, when you find that Laserdisc version, that's when you ring me up at any hour. Don't worry what time
it is.
Dude, I found it. Just give me your address again. I'm like, I'll be waiting like the dog that's lost its master outside the front door for it to be. Yeah. Mm. Funny, and speaking just real quick before we get that Flash Gordon. Now that I've bought a couple of vinyls, and we'll buy some more sporadically here and there. I'm not gonna. What the hell's with the overpricing of the secondhand stuff?
It's terrible. Yeah. Used to get that.
I'm sorry, $15 for an old Val Dunican album is ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You want to charge me $20 for a used copy of Fleetwood Mac's Rumours?
Oh, that's cheap. You should see what they're asking for it here.
What?
You'd be looking at
Bidenflation.
80 or $90. I saw today an old Queen one. What was it? News of the World. Or Jazz was one of those two. It was going for $250 in mint condition.
That's got to be some weird music on vinyl pressing or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Discogs is really. I mean, this Mammophon I found was an absolute steal.
Well, you know, if you go to Josie Records or something here in town, you know, the used stuff is pretty fair or at half price books, but occasionally you'll come across something where it's like, why is this Rolling Stones album cost this much? You know, it doesn't make any sense. You know,
why is this torn up copy of Sticky Fingers gone for $100? Yeah.
Zipper's been broken off, you know?
Yeah, it has. Yeah. But the next quest is the two Andrea True Connection albums. That's my mad hunt to find those on vinyl. Hopefully they turn up somewhere.
What about
the
Flash Gordon soundtrack on vinyl?
Oh, I've got a nice CD. That'll do. I mean, if it turned up for a buck or two, which it will not, but if it did, I'll grab it and stick it in the shelf.
So what's better, the Flash Gordon soundtrack by Queen or the Highlander soundtrack by Queen?
Well, it's hard to say because Highlander is not fully dedicated to Highlander because what's the first song? One Vision? That's for Iron Eagle.
That was Iron Eagle, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not really exclusive.
But One Vision's not on. Is that on Highlander?
Is it?
I don't think so.
On the A Kind of Magic album. I'm sure.
Oh, it might be on the A Kind of Magic. They might have.
Yeah, they have.
I guess it's on A Kind of Magic.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's what I remember. Was there ever a Highlander soundtrack with just Queen on it? I don't remember seeing one. I would have seen it.
I think there was like a CD they would include with some DVD releases of Highlander, one of the 10,000 DVD.
Yeah, so it's a limited edition run thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because it bombed in the US, but there's like so many home video tie-in releases.
Oh, boy.
It's got that cult following on video. You
know? Yeah, it flopped in our theaters big time.
So is Flash Gordon.
Yep.
Yep.
And a Flash Gordon soundtrack by Queen is good, but there's very little Freddie Mercury, obviously, because there's not many vocal requirements for him.
Right.
And no, but I heard it in the car the other night going to work, and it's perfectly fine. They're very different. because Highlander's all songs. There's no incidental music, whereas Flash Gordon is primarily incidental music and a couple of songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Flash's theme, the hero, the end credit song. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they're very, very different.
Princes of the Universe is hard to beat, I think. You
know? It is, yeah. And Gimme the Prize as well.
Yeah, yeah. And that music video where Freddie is sword fighting Christopher Lambert with the mic stand.
Yeah, that's classic. That's iconic.
Yeah.
I mean, Russell Mulcahy, that guy knew how to put together a music video.
No, he was good. He was very, very good.
You Aussies know how to do music videos, you know.
Yeah. His first venture ever into feature film was the Derek and Clive.
Oh, really?
Live. Yeah, which is the Dudley Moore and Dudley Moore and Peter Cook. That was it.
Yeah.
And it's just them basically drunk, just being as offensive as possible in a studio.
So and just an afternoon in Australia.
Derek and Clive Get the Horn, I think it was. Yeah. Yeah. That was the first thing he ever did. And bankrolled by Richard Branson as well.
Of course. You know what's I did not like a movie that I was so keen to see that he did that I thought would that I thought I would love and then I did not like it was Razorback.
It's crap. I saw it on VHS when it came. It was terrible.
Yeah.
It's a dumb movie. What was the tagline here? It was Jaws with Trotters, I think it was. Stupid. It was just dumb. Yeah, I remember renting it out. It was a big thing about it when it came out, and I thought, well, I'll rent it out, and it was just stupid.
Yeah, that one had a cult following, and I was excited to watch it. Then when I watched it, I went, this is like a one-star
piece. Yeah, it had a cult following back in the 80s, but even in the 90s a bit, but with subsequent releases, people look at it and go, yeah, it's not that good.
Yeah, for the longest time, the Japanese Laserdisc was highly sought after, because I think it was the only way to see it widescreen.
It's been rectified now with the Blu-ray here. It got a release last year, I think, by the Australian label that's bringing out those exclusive Australian releases from the 80s and the 70s, which hopefully they'll bring out the Elven Purple set.
Of course. I'll have to order that.
Yeah, that's a good staple of a good visual sort of summary of what Melbourne was like back in the 70s. Very, very different. Very much a wasteland.
Right.
It was in Mad Max 2. Like when you drive out to that drive-in that's still available, still open in Coburg, it was just wasteland. You would just drive and it would just, but now it's all different. It's all built up suburban area. But yeah, very different. But if they do the Elven Purple, I want Elven Purple, Elven Rides Again, the Elven Purple TV series, all 13 episodes. And I want Melvin, Son of Elven, which will not be in there because it will not pass the censors. No way. That first 5 minutes will kill any chance of that film getting released again. It's never gotten a release since Vietnam. No way. Not in this day and age.
So, since you guys are not fans of this movie, what is the better Flash Gordon series out there?
Flesh Gordon. Flesh Gordon. And even that's bad.
I will tell you straight up that the Buster Crab, the original Buster Crab serial is terrific. The subsequent serials like Flash Gordon Conquers the Universe and I think Goes to Mars is the third one are not as good. They're very toned down. But the first one is very adult. You know, the actresses are wearing skimpy pre-code costumes and such, and it's very noticeable because they were being very faithful to the Alex Raymond strip, which if you read it, you'd be surprised how adult it actually is for a 1930s comic strip that was in newspapers.
This was the kind of comic strip that would cause a moral panic, you know.
Right. But back then, I guess the depression and everything, people, they allowed it. It was very popular and, of course, was published around the world, very popular in Italy and such. Was just terrific. Also, there is a Filmation animated series that was actually produced in 79.
I remember
Yeah, not shown on TV until 81, because I think the Filmation reached an agreement with De Laurentiis. Like, he gave them completion funds to finish the series, but they couldn't show it till like Flash Gordon was out of theaters. And it's excellent. It's actually an excellent, best thing Filmation ever did. It's great.
It was out here back in the 90s on a really cheap backyard home DVD company, and they'll put like six episodes on it. I never got them. Bloody what I had. Yeah,
but BCI Eclipse put it out on DVD back in the 00s, and it's excellent. I picked it up. It's a great set, great series.
Oh. There's a box set. I'm looking at the serials here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and there's a Flash Gordon box set, $153.
It's the Image DVD with the old standard transfers. Because it's everybody's wanted that to come out on Blu-ray, like, because Universal is sitting on the negatives and everything, but just hasn't happened yet.
Then I see for $10 Flash Gordon collect 3-disc collector's edition. It's got Buster Crabbe and Steve Holland. Over 10
hours. So it's one of the public domain serials, and it's probably the TV show that Steve Holland did collected.
Be good to get for $10. I mean, it's a timestamp.
Yeah,
collecting these for sure.
I just wonder about some of these public domain ones that they look like crap.
Oh boy, that one I picked up for $1. I can't remember what the it was terrible. The quality was, it was basically like it was ripped off of YouTube. It was just awful.
Probably was.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it worth $10? Is it worth taking the
what label put it out?
It's not telling me.
It's not Mill Creek.
It's go.
I'm gonna check which one I've got. Just hang on a second.
Studio Alchemy Millennium.
I wouldn't bother.
Okay.
Just wait. I think VCI is trying to negotiate to get Flash Gordon on Blu-ray because they worked out a deal with Universal. They're putting out a lot of their old serials on Blu-ray and HD, and they're getting the negatives from Universal. So, because Universal doesn't want to bother with releasing this stuff on home video, and I think Flash Gordon is going to be the real, you know, when that happens, that's going to be a big deal. Because I know they're aiming for it.
I actually think the one I've got is not on the shelf. It's in the garage. I think it is Flash Gordon. I'm pretty damn sure.
Yeah, the Image one is going for $153.
Yeah, the Image. I picked up that Image set for like $6 back in 2010 because I was going on a serial collecting Jones. And I saw that and went, oh, I love this serial. And then got that. And now it's like this crazy collector's item. You can probably find it on YouTube.
Oh,
I bet
sure.
Somebody. I bet you somebody's uploaded that Image DVD to YouTube, and you can watch every chapter. It's great, though. That old serial is the best treatment of, it's the best treatment of that story in another medium. It's great, great stuff.
Nice.
That was intended. You know, we always think these cliffhanger serials were supposed to be just for kids. That one was specifically made to bring adults into the theater.
They're like flesh.
Yeah, well, they were like, let's pull in the adults. We could get the adult audience into this, you know, because people during the Depression, everybody wanted to get away from it all, and so see this crazy stuff.
Yeah, during the Depression.
Yeah,
my apologies.
Flash Gordon, he was the hero.
Now the one I got was Buck Rogers.
Oh, okay,
everybody confuses Buck Rogers. It's because George Lucas is like, oh, I love Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers.
Yeah. And Buster Crabbe played both.
Yeah.
I wanted to do Buck Rogers.
Just a shame of the quality of that.
Flash Gordon. And I couldn't do it. So I made up Luke Skywalker.
Well, you know, George Lucas was trying to get the rights to Flash Gordon in like 1970.
Yeah, he was. And they go.
Fellini was sitting on him with De Laurentiis. And, Lucas couldn't cough out the money, so he started making Star Wars, was supposed to be a cheap ripoff.
Yep.
Kind of done through California hippie 70s style.
Yep.
The only thing George Lucas needs to do is just abandon all projects, go back and put out THX-1138, the original cut. Do you want to include your
front
director's one with it? I don't care, but put that original in there because it's a big difference. Big difference.
I think George Lucas should go back and get the rights to Flash Gordon and just do his version of Flash Gordon.
Nah.
Be like, they're still trying to relaunch a new Flash Gordon movie. Every couple of years, you see the announcement and whatever hot director of the moment is attached to it. And then it's just nothing happens.
I'm going to do Flash Gordon. And it's going to be shot on all digital at the ranch. And
yeah, we'll shoot it in one room.
It's going to be like poetry. It'll repeat itself. It's going to be really good. And people are going to say, I'm the devil for trying to do it.
They'll never have a Princess Zara as good as Ornella Muti. I'll say
no
that.
Way. No way. They'll probably get Lindsay Lohan and say, huh?
Like, yeah, Lindsay Lohan.
I don't know. I'm just throwing names.
My goodness. What year is it? 2004? Anything else about Flash Gordon we're missing?
Yeah, the effects are terrible.
They're not great.
They're awful.
But they're charming. I like the effect. They remind me of Mario Bava films.
Well, they look like Barbarella.
Yeah.
Which is a movie I don't like. But
here's the thing. These effects would probably be excusable if this movie was from the 60s. But it's not. But that's okay. I'm okay with it.
I can see your point, because 2 years earlier we got Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park and the effects in that are god awful, but I love them another child.
So I
see what you're saying, but for me it's just
Here's the thing. One reason I really like this movie more than y'all is I think I sat down last night and I went, I'm just gonna throw this on and I'll watch like an hour and I'll finish it tomorrow. And I sat through the whole thing because I just love the candy colored visuals. And I was just sitting there going,
right. You like what you like. There's no one.
I was just doing the soy jack face, going,
it's new to you, Hunter. We were kind of done with this movie before you were born. Put it that way.
Yeah. And I loved the effects. And I was going, and remember the first time I watched this, it was on a small television.
Right.
Was kind of just like, okay, it's an 80s movie, whatever, that's cool. But watching it now, I went, I love the visual effects. I love the campiness. I thought Sam Jones's look was a lot of fun. I was like, well, I can't act, but he looks like he was drawn in for a comic book. I thought the plot could have been put together better. And like you said, Flash gets through stuff through deception, and it's not the most heroic behavior.
No, he's not the two-fisted hero that Buster Crabbe played or Alex Raymond drew.
No, like
William Catt.
All the criticisms of this movie you guys are giving are perfectly valid. But that said, I still really enjoyed it. I still had a really good time with it. Honestly, a lot of it was just, I just liked looking at it.
The ballworms. Like the ballworms,
yeah.
Stupid.
I just enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, well, Flash on that bloody, hovercraft or what the hell he's on.
It's totally stupid. Like John said, that finale totally disappointing. Like he just crashes into Ming and that's it.
Ming's ring falls on the ground. That's it.
Yeah, I completely agree with all of that. Just that said. It's just a movie I enjoyed looking at. I just had fun watching. I couldn't stop watching it. I'm going to watch an hour. I watched the whole thing and just enjoyed it.
Timothy Dalton was a simp in it as well. It's like that princess is running around as soon as Flash has been there for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Wants to straddle him. And later on, he's like, oh, we'll get married. And
I saw Jedi Cole's brother at work. And I watched Flash Gordon last night and he goes, man, every time I catch that thing, whatever it is, I have to watch the whole thing.
It just sounds like Cole as well.
Yeah. Oh, they're very similar.
I imagine. Yeah.
But it was, he was going, oh yeah. He goes, I have to watch the whole thing whenever I catch it. And I found it hypnotic. I don't know what it is.
Well, the one thing cool about it that is often talked about by the cult fans of it is Peter Wingard's performance as Clytus.
Yeah.
The gold. You never see his face. He's wearing the gold mask.
Yeah.
you know, there's all those rumors of why it was because of his arrest for an incident in a men's restroom in London or wherever, or a truck stop. I don't but it's a great, and it's a great, it's a great, like, Vincent Price style performance.
Yeah.
Not performed by Vincent Price. Like, Peter Wingard's voice is the perfect villain voice. Very... And like, when he sees Hitler, he goes, oh, that was an individual with potential, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that was great. There's a...
John, what was that show he did? Was it Department S?
Department S, and then he did Jason King.
Jason King, that's the other one he talks about. Yeah.
Yeah, my wife and I are such big fans of the Jason King show because it was like an inspiration on Austin Powers. And you have this obviously fey hero who the ladies are just falling all over. I had the comic book artist Neil Vokes draw a picture of Jason King like he's a Steranko hero, like Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., and with the women at his legs and everything. Yeah. And they got it framed and for our anniversary. But it was just like that. Ooh. It was like, so I have like a custom, you know, piece of art based on Jason King and Peter Wingard because we're such big fans. But but yeah, I enjoy the Clitus character. That performance is really fun.
I got big Dr. Fibes vibes from him, you know?
There's a little of that. Yeah.
He gives a standout performance. Very random appearance from Rocky Horror scribe Richard O'Brien.
Who has not, honestly, he's in that documentary from 2007. Guy doesn't age. He must have sold his soul.
He looks the same. Yeah.
Holy shit. He's ridiculous. He's like 70 now, and he just looks like he's about 40. It's insane. I've never seen anybody look as young as they do for his age.
It's weird to see white guys who don't crack like that, like Dick.
It's Clark. The Alice Cooper or Ernest Borgnine effect. They were always kind of, they always looked old, so they don't age. You know?
Ernest Borgnine and Alice Cooper both have looked the same for 40 years, or Ernest did, you know, when before he died, but you know, like in basketball, he looked the same as he did in Marty.
And Superfuzz.
Yeah, and Superfuzz.
Dave.
Film with that's Hot Fuzz. I was gonna say with Timothy Dalton. That's Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz. I'm a slasher. Oh man, that scene in that movie where Timothy Dalton says the security footage will exonerate him and he grins next to his picture of himself. It's so good.
That is the weakest of that Cornetto trilogy, in my opinion. But I need to go back and watch it again, so I have got it.
It is the weakest. You know, I loved it when it came out, but you know what? The one that I think I didn't appreciate at the time that I think might be the best is World's End.
World's End, yeah, that's great.
I know Edgar Wright is not based, but that movie is extremely based.
Never saw it.
Oh, John, it is. What? Every time I watch it, I'm like, this movie anticipated so much. And I'll
look forward to Big Lots. Yeah. Put it that way. Okay.
Yeah.
Dollar Tree.
Oh, it's really good. I've watched it several times recently and I go, this movie, it just prefigured so many issues that would come about. I'm not going to get too much more into it than that, but it's
a fun watch, John.
But I remember my dad saw it in the theater and I wasn't thinking about it at the time, but he goes, I think this is an extremely political movie and I think it's very right wing.
Really? Like accidentally?
I went, really? And he goes, yeah, you know, I think it's about the loss of culture. I think it's about the loss of tradition and it mourns that. And I went, really? And then, and now when you watch, I'm like,
Well, I'm intrigued. I'll check it out.
Yeah, I think you would like it.
Okay.
Even if you're not a fan of those filmmakers and those stars, I think you would like it.
I like their movies the first time. I don't like them the second time.
This is one, the first time I watched it, I went, but this was in 2013 or whenever it came
right
out. And every subsequent time, like as time has passed, I've gone,
yeah.
Shaun of the Dead, for me, I really liked the first time, and it sort of dropped off each time after that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I liked Hot Fuzz a lot, but the last time I watched it, I remember thinking it kind of falls apart in the third act a little bit. But
yeah, and it goes on quite a while. It's like 2 hours and
yeah. it's so over long. It should have been 88 minutes.
Yeah, I got that feeling the last time I watched it. But World's End, I think, is you know, the one that's sort of aged like wine a little bit.
Mm. Yeah. Unlike Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
Aged like sport milk.
Yeah.
So let's rate Flash Gordon. Stu, what do you give it? You picked it. What do you give it?
I'm going to give it a 4. Ooh. Yeah.
The Christian Bale American Psycho face. Ooh.
Yeah. I was looking at if I enjoyed it to upgrade to the 4K box set, but nah. I'll stick with my Blu-ray. It looks fine. That'll do.
Yep. That'll do, Pig. John, what about you?
Give it a 5. My old Universal Special Edition DVD is going to be at the 2nd and Charles in Broomfield, Colorado, probably in about 3 weeks.
All right,
listeners. If you want to grab, I picked it up for $3 at a Burlington Coat Factory store 8 years ago. Finally broke the plastic on it and watched it. And it's going right to the 2nd and Charles sack. But yeah.
Well, you heard it here, folks. Mark your calendars. In 3 weeks, that copy can be yours.
Yes.
You can really Flatiron's
Ball, 2nd and Charles. It'll be there.
I will give it a 7 out of 10. I really enjoyed it, despite all of its flaws, which are many. It was a feast for the eyes and for the senses for me. Love the actors. You know, even despite all of its problems, that I still enjoy it immensely.
Max von Sydow was very good.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, perfect as me.
He never is bad. He's never bad. But,
no.
He may do what the best he could with this.
Any project, he elevates anything he's in.
Yeah. And who's the princess, John? Ornella?
Ornella Muti, Italian actress.
She gets like about 3.9 stars.
You know, I was watching it going like, what's Flash doing with this other girl? he could
round faced New York journalist, whatever she was, like,
yeah.
And Ornella Muti still looks great. Like,
yeah,
he was in a Terrence Hill comedy, Western, Doc West, or the Doc West sequel. I forget which one. She was in that like 10 years ago. Still fantastic. Amazing looking actress.
You do age very, very well.
Yeah.
Better than some others.
Yes.
Hmm.
Polite.
I'm being very polite.
Yeah.
Well, anything to add on this one?
No. Yeah.
Well, everybody, I guess I'm just going to go ahead and say adios.
Yo, peace out.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.